Welcome to the Animal Voices Radio Show here on 100.5 FM Co-op Radio CFRO in Vancouver, British Columbia, Canada. Today is Friday, March the 13th, 2015. Yes, it's Friday the 13th. I am your host, Allison Cole, and I am joined here today by my co-host, Jackie McIntosh.
Hello.
And our control room operator, Amir Ali.
Hey, happy Friday the 13th.
Alyssa and Cynthia are away today. Likewise, Amir, welcome everyone. Animal Voices is Western Canada's only radio program dedicated to animal advocacy and compassionate living, broadcasting live every Friday from noon till 1 p.m. Pacific Standard Time and bringing you interviews, commentary, news, and events that you need to keep up to date on what's happening both locally and abroad. In addition to our live broadcast here on 100.5 FM and at coopradio.org, our shows are also available as podcasts on iTunes and at animalvoices.org after airing. Today's show is for the marine mammals. For our first interview today, we'll be learning about the illegal dolphin slaughter that has been happening in Peru ever since the 1960s. This is a slaughter that takes place on an enormous scale of around 20,000 murdered dolphins every year, yet no one really knows about it. Our guest, Stefan Ostermühle, executive director of the Peruvian NGO called Mundo Azul, took it upon himself to go undercover on a shark fishing boat for 24 days in Peru, where he captured video footage that shows the atrocious slaughter of these beautiful creatures who are being killed and dismembered for shark bait, as well as for sale for human consumption. He'll be telling us about his findings and how he plans to expose this brutality to the world. And for our feature interview, we have Cheryl Fink from the International Fund for Animal Welfare Canada on the show today. The annual Canadian seal slaughter season is coming up, and despite claims that it's a nearly dead industry, Fisheries Minister Gail Shea just announced a quota a few weeks ago to allow 468,000 seals to be killed this year. The hunt is still happening, and it's a completely economically unsustainable industry. We'll be speaking with Cheryl to help us understand the politics behind this dying but not quite dead yet industry, and she will also describe to us exactly what she has seen on the ice in her last 11 years of observing and documenting the kill. That interview is coming up in 30 minutes, so please do stay tuned.
Well, and speaking about marine mammals, the Vancouver Aquarium just likes to claim that research and education are their top priorities, but in their recently released 2013 annual report, it just says that conservation, research, and education accounted for 12%, only 12% of its total expenditures. What are your thoughts on that?
Well, what is that compared to other expenditures such as retail operations? That one was bit iffy to me.
So this, like, 12%, and that's for all three, like conservation, research, and education, all together, not separately.
And that's that is probably their mandate, right?
That is their well, that's what they say that they're there for. Yeah. But retail operations and facility operations are they each separately accounted for 18%. So that means 36% to retail and facility.
Yeah.
But only 12 for conservation, research, and education altogether. So interesting.
What I would have to say about that is, having worked at a nonprofit before too, and knowing like not all the money can go towards your mission, but I would still think that more than 12% would go towards what you're there to do. And I know you were saying earlier that they do have their marine mammal rescue center, which isn't even part of the aquarium, and it's used, there's a lot of volunteers used there. So it seems like they're not using, I mean, there's not money going towards paying a lot of people to do that. So I wonder, it seems like they could be using more of their resources for conservation issues. And I understand now, too, is that they've put in a bid to actually start a marine facility, entertainment facility, a really large one in Spain.
Yeah, that's really
weird. What's that
about? They had a quote about that, and they said that the goal is to generate more revenue to be able to do more conservation work, more education. And they also said, we're very much a business, a nonprofit business, which is kind of funny.
Yeah, exactly. And that's the thing, right, is they claim they use this nonprofit title proudly, and they proudly, you know, talk about their research and education. I think that's why the majority of people go there, is because they think that they are supporting a good organization. But clearly that's not the case when, you know, they, you know, send their beloved whales off to other aquariums to be used as nothing more than breeding equipment, essentially. Like Nanook recently died, which was a beluga whale from the aquarium. And that was, you know, heartbreaking to find out. But that's just how they care about, you know, these animals that they claim to, you know, conserve.
Well, I do find it to be ironic, too, is the quote that Amir just read, that it says that they're going to be using that money to go towards more conservation. Is that essentially what it said? So they're essentially they are exploiting animals to save animals or to conserve animals. And that to me is just a really messed up business model, whether it's nonprofit or not. I mean, it doesn't really matter. It's like, how do we support our mandate of supposedly conservation, education, research? Well, let's go exploit a lot of animals in doing what we know how to do best, which is to put on dolphin shows and make it really huge, this place in Europe.
Yeah, and it's interesting too, like on their website or like on when people are going to buy tickets, they talk a lot about research, education, but they don't talk about, you know, all the other funds that their money is going towards. That's all they talk about. Mm-hmm. And so people are buying tickets thinking that that's where their money's going, and it's actually going towards facility operations primarily, which seems really unethical, actually.
Yeah, and I would say that because they are a nonprofit, they are obligated to put out these annual reports, and they are obligated to post them. You can actually find them on the Canada Revenue Agency website, if not on their own website. So that's always a way to access them and to find out the information yourself. And we found out about this issue this week from a story that the Globe and Mail had posted, and it was really well written. I think it was like an op-ed, right? It was, but just really well researched.
Yeah.
And I just posted that to our Facebook page, actually, or I think it might be getting posted. I might have set it to post in a couple of minutes, so it might not be there right now, but Animal Voices Vancouver, if you want to check that out.
Roots Reggae, heard every Friday night from midnight until daylight. 7 hours long and 7 hours strong, giving you music for the mind, soul, and body. It's an holistic experience. We say it's ital and vital. My name is Lyndon V, and you've got it locked in Vancouver's Healing Station, 100.5 FM CFRO.
So, Allison, this is actually a story that you shared with me earlier, and it's very troubling and disturbing. Dog owners out there, please be extra cautious regarding your pet dogs. The SPCA in North Peace in northeastern BC is reporting a definite increase in missing dogs, but one pet owner in BC believes it's directly related to dog fighting rings, actually, in northeastern BC. There's this dog owner up there who witnessed a woman trying to coax a neighbor's dog into a white SUV, claiming that she was from the SPCA, but when the neighbor actually called the dog owner, the person that was trying to coax the dog actually fled the scene. Larger breeds are supposedly being targeted, and dogs who have a fight style appearance, apparently, whatever that means.
Pit bulls.
Yeah. So just please be extra vigilant, even though it's in northeastern BC. Jackie, you were mentioning that there are dog fighting rings out here in Vancouver, obviously.
I think there's dog fighting, unfortunately, everywhere right now.
It's really underground.
It's really underground.
I was shocked to hear that here in Canada and BC, and as you said, in Vancouver, we don't hear about this very much.
It happens everywhere. I think people just don't really recognize it unless, you know, you hear these stories, and so hopefully this will spread some awareness for people.
Yeah, hopefully.
In other news, Animal Justice Canada Legislative Fund, otherwise known as Animal Justice, filed a legal complaint against winter jacket manufacturer Canada Goose Wednesday, asserting that Canada Goose is engaged in false and misleading advertising related to claims that the coyote fur trim on its ubiquitous jackets comes from humanely trapped animals. And I did that with air quotes because
how can
exactly
what's the humane part of being trapped?
Exactly, having your leg caught in a trap,
like whole trap,
for up to 3 days is really really humane. Anyway, and the complaint also against Canada Goose was filed with the Competition Bureau, which enforces federal consumer protection laws. Under the Competition Act, companies are prohibited from misleading consumers about their products, including false claims of animal welfare. The complaint alleges that Canada Goose's website and marketing materials are riddled with numerous misleading claims regarding the welfare of animals trapped for their fur in Canada, including the coyotes used in Canada Goose jackets. It's well documented that the fur trade engages in practices that most consumers do not consider humane, including using traps that cause significant injury and suffering to animals, and leaving some traps unchecked for days at a time, said lawyer Camille Labchuk, director of legal advocacy with Animal Justice. By claiming the fur trim on its jackets comes from humanely trapped coyotes, Canada Goose is preying on ethically conscious consumers. And we all have heard about Canada Goose on the show. We've discussed this a few times. Yeah. And yeah, we know this to be true. They have they actually have a fur policy posted on their website, which, you know, contains a lot of this information. They claim that the animals are trapped humanely, that whatever that means, I don't understand how people could be misleaded to think that it's humane, but people do. They think that the term certified trapper means something when actually it means that someone goes out and buys like a $50 license to go hunt. Like,
there's no regulations either on any of those labels. So once again, like many of our food products, they can just call it whatever they want. And it gives consumers a false sense of... I guess feeling good about
And they also Canada Goose also alleges that using fur trim on jacket hoods does a better job of protecting facial skin from frostbite than synthetic fur, when in reality no such evidence exists, and synthetic fur and other materials are regarded as highly warm and functional. And I also find this kind of interesting when almost everyone, especially in Vancouver, that I've seen wearing this jacket, these jackets, the hood is never up. The hood's always down.
Because we're in Vancouver. We're in Vancouver. It's 15 degrees today. Exactly. Stop wearing our Canada Goose jackets.
So, yeah, hopefully that will cause, will give Canada Goose some something to think about and maybe, you know, decide to drop the fur.
You are listening to Animal Voices on Vancouver's Co-op Radio, 100.5 FM CFRO. 100% listener-sponsored radio broadcasting live from the east side on unceded Coast Salish territories.
Stéphane Austermulet is the executive director of the Peruvian conservation NGO Mundo Azul, as well as the new Peruvian NGO INECI, which stands for Inter-American Institute for Integral Ecology. He has had 29 years of experience in leadership positions in environmental and marine conservation and research in both Germany and Peru. He is also general manager of the Peruvian marine ecotourism operator Nature Expeditions with 11 years of experience in tourism. Stefan is a leading marine conservationist who has exposed the extent of the illegal dolphin hunt in Peru, where thousands of dolphins are killed each year and sold illegally or used as shark bait. And he is here today to speak with us about this issue. Hello, Stefan, and welcome to the Animal Voices show.
Hi, how are you?
I'm great, thank you. So I've only heard about this illegal dolphin hunt in Peru very recently, and I don't know a lot about it, as I'm sure is the same for a lot of our listeners. So could you first start by explaining to us what the history is with hunting dolphins in Peru? How and why did it start?
Yeah, it started in the 1960s, actually, when Italian immigrants came to Peru and brought with them the custom to eat dried dolphin meat, which is sold as mochame here. And there was very little dolphins killed for that purpose. But in 1970, we had a fisheries crash here when the sardines population were overfished. So there was a lot of poverty around. Fishermen were out of job. And at that point, they discovered dolphin meat as a cheap source of protein for human consumption. And from that year on, the number of dolphins hunted for human consumption went up and up and up. So in the 90s, 20 years later, that numbers had reached about 20,000 dolphins per year for human consumption in totally legal fisheries. And at that time, Peruvian conservationists started to lobby and campaign against this killing, and I became involved from Germany. I was living in Germany at that time, starting to support these NGOs with advice. And by 1996, the ex-president Fujimori made a law prohibiting the killing of dolphins for human for any kind of reason. So since more than nearly 20 years now, it's prohibited, to kill dolphins. It's seen as an ecological crime, punished with 3 years of jail. However, in the year 2000, when we started, when I came to Peru and we started the NGO Mundo Azul, or Blue World, and did biodiversity research along the beaches of the coastline, we found dead dolphins that had obviously been cut into pieces. So we recognize that there is still an ongoing illegal trade of dolphins for human consumption, and we started doing undercover research with hidden cameras at that time, 2003, 2004, and we basically found the illegal sale of that meat everywhere in any kind of fishing market along the coast. So what basically happened is fishermen didn't bring it to the pier anymore. They cut the dolphin in pieces, throw the cadaver overboard before entering the port, and were hiding the meat under fish, and then it surfaced in the market where it was sold. So what we did is we worked with the police, with the Peruvian police, to catch these meat dealers, and did that for a few years, but still this illegal sale for human consumption is still going on. I already know, again, two or three places where I could go, and there are dealers selling that. So there's we estimate like 2,000 dolphins per year still being used for human consumption illegally. However, having said that, over the last years, we heard more and more rumors about dolphins being used as shark bait. So not anymore for human consumption, but being killed far out at sea by the shark fishing fleet and then cut into pieces, and that piece of meat were used as bait on the hooks of longline fishing fleet. And the first time that we actually got a witness telling us about that in front of a camera was 2007, when we made a documentary in the rainforest about river dolphins, and one of these taxi drivers was an ex-fisherman, told us about that. And since then, we tried to find a way to prove that, and actually tried to find resources to prove that. But it's very difficult because that's happening 40 miles out at sea on very small fishing boats with 3-4 crew members. So you can't put a hidden camera on board. You can't. There's no way to prove that, and it's never coming back to the coast. So in 2013, we finally got support from Blue Voice, which is an American NGO for dolphin conservation, and we had the resources to start first an undercover investigation along the coast. So we sent out our investigators through the ports with hidden cameras just to talk to fishermen on the street, and we actually didn't really think that would come up with a lot, because it's an illegal activity, it's an ecological crime. But to our very surprise, in 2 weeks we got 20 interviews from different parts of the coast, everybody saying to a totally strange person on the street that asks you, oh yes, I'm killing dolphins, or yeah, I know my friend is killing dolphins. And in any time they go out, they kill 3, 4, or 5 dolphins for that purpose. The numbers range between 2 and 10 dolphins per fishing trip. Now, when you count the number of boats that are legally registered for longline fishing on sharks, that's about 500. And then the number of trips they do per year, and then you multiply that with the numbers, then you come to a staggering number of 5,000 to 15,000 dolphins that could be dying for that purpose. But then again, that was all rumor. There was no way to prove that. So we came up with a very, very radical idea. We basically contacted one of these boats, and we said, hey, look, guys, we're a foreign TV crew, and we want to make a movie about a TV documentary about shark fishing. And we didn't say a word about dolphins. And they agreed to take me and another crew member, another team member of my team, for 1 month on a fishing trip. So we went there 1 month fishing sharks, and we actually filmed the killing and harpooning and killing of dolphins. And we were more surprised even though, because we had imagined, maybe a little naive, even for a biologist, but we had imagined fishing sharks is like fishing with a rod, you know. You get the shark on the hook and you take him out, and that's it, basically, very unromantically. But then we had to film the way the sharks were killed, and that was at least as brutal and cruel as the killing of the dolphins. I was very shocked by filming that.
Can you describe for us what you did witness and observe in the killing in both the dolphins and the sharks? How are you seeing them being slaughtered?
Well, basically, what happens is the dolphins, as they serve as shark bait, will be fished or hunted on the way to the fishing ground. So basically the fishermen wait till one of these beautiful animals comes to bow ride. They're the only one animals they do that. They ride in the bow, they have fun, and then use a hand-thrown harpoon and ram them from above into the animal. It gets hooked and bleeds out slowly, and when it is not very strong anymore because it has lost a lot of blood, then they drag it to the boat and lift it in the boat, and if it's strong enough still to defend itself, then it gets clubbed with a club till it doesn't move anymore. Then they get being hauled on the board and immediately cut into pieces. I mean, they don't wait if the animal is finally dead or not. It's not moving anymore. It's getting cut into pieces. And then the meat and the blubber is saved. The rest are thrown overboard because only the meat, the muscle meat and the blubber has enough strength to stay on the hook because the hook is in the water for several hours to fish a shark. Now, that is the killing of the dolphins. Yeah, bad enough. But when you then fish the sharks at night, they have them on the hook, they get them on the boat, and they're still alive. They're still biting around. And the target of, or the goal of the fisherman is to be fast. So he has to make sure that the shark does not move anymore and can't bite him anymore when he has to take out the hook. So what they do is they take a knife, and it's a very dramatic description, I'm sorry for that. They take the knife and they cut the nose off in front of the eyes, and with that they cut through the first of the three brains. Shark has three brains, one after the other. So they cut off the face, basically. They cut through the first brain, and then they take the finger and mush up the brain. And then they take a long metal stick, like 60 centimeters, and they push it through the three brains, through the spine, down the spine, to make the shark, to immobilize the shark. Can't move anymore. That does not mean that the shark is dead. Yeah, I have seen sharks still, even if they were treated like that, still moving their tails for more than 40 minutes, agonizing. I have seen shark mothers. You may know that the sharks are giving birth to living shark babies, 20 to 50, depending on the species. So I have seen supposedly dead shark mothers with their faces cutting off, aborting their babies, live, living babies into the cadavers, and they just died there in between the cadavers because there's no time to throw them overboard. They just don't care about that. So it's a really brutal slaughter. It goes on for the entire night. It's dramatic.
Yeah. I would say that the slaughtering of the sharks is also an ecological crime. Now, I'm interested in knowing what you're doing with this information that you've discovered. You mentioned working with the local police. Can you tell us about that and how the police is getting involved?
Yeah, let me just add to this. The sharks are also overfished. I mean, we have a law that says you cannot bring in or land on the pier more than 10% of juveniles. And we have official statistics that tell us that basically all the time we're landing more than 90% of juveniles. And if there is no adult animal anymore, that means the population is nearly extinct. It's totally overfished. So it's killing sharks and dolphins at the same time, wiping them out. Now, having said that, the problem that we have now with the shark fisheries is police cannot do anything because it's happening out there in the ocean. And the Coast Guard can't do anything neither because not even the most equipped U.S. Coast Guard would be able to control 500 fishing boats like needles in a haystack being in the ocean. There's just no way to find them in the moment when they kill a dolphin and surprise them. It's impossible. So you can't control that. There is no way to control that. However, having said that, there's a very easy, super easy solution to that. It's really, you can laugh yourself away. So easy it is. Because the only way to kill the dolphin is using a handheld harpoon. Now, these harpoons are so heavy, you can't throw them horizontally. You just ram them from up down. That's the only way. And the only animal in the ocean that comes to the boat, under the boat, is the dolphin. The sea lion will stay away. No fish will swim parallel to your boat. So you can clearly say the fisherman that has a harpoon on the boat is because he wants to kill a dolphin. This tool is not serving for anything else than for dolphins. So what we proposed to the government more than a year ago, the only thing that you have to do, add one sentence into the existing law that says it is prohibited to build, to sell, and to possess a harpoon. And with that, any Coast Guard official can go on a shark fishing boat before it leaves the port, search the boat. You cannot hide this big thing in a small boat. Get the harpoon confiscated, put whatever kind of punishment they want, but they can free the boats of harpoons, and no harpoon, no dolphins killed. And they can fish the shark with fish bait or with a squid or whatever they use additionally. Yeah. So very super easy solution, no costs involved, control in the port, just prohibit the harpoons. However, having said that, we proposed that to the government. When we published this graphic material here in the TV channels in Peru, we got a very, very strong reaction from the Peruvian public. In only 3 months, we got 1,300,000 signatures against this. But then again, that was just like a bubble. That shows you that internet activism, sadly, does not lead to much change sometimes. So the government ignored it. The government said publicly in press conference that we would be lying, that we would have paid somebody to kill the dolphin to get the material. My staff lives now with death threats. We all live with death threats. We had to stop our dolphin research because we had to bring our boats away into another port because they were threatened to sink the boats. We had to stop the research program. We were financing the NGO with dolphin tourism. That is gone. We stopped that because we can't secure the safety of our tourists and of our boats anymore and of our staff. We can't go into that port anymore. And where we have the boats now, there's no dolphins. So basically, they bankrupted the NGO. And what we're trying to do now is to edit all this material that we have into a movie. We have enough material for a one-hour movie, and we have it in, we can do that in English, Spanish, and German language. And then put out that movie on an international scale. Because at the moment, the government tries to put a lid on this and just cover it up. But if that movie exists, then it can't be covered up. The world will know, and the government will be under pressure. And then they will add that little sentence into the law, and done is the thing. So it's a very easy goal. It's very easy to reach. And what we need to now is we have a fundraising effort, a crowdfunding effort. We need to raise, I think we're missing like $27,000, that's not a lot, to make the entire post-production of 3 documentaries in different languages, and then we distribute it for free through the TV channels, and this will stop. I mean, that's not like Japan, where you have to fight 10 years against the culture. We have a law, it's prohibited, it's just one sentence missing. Very easy target.
I think that is an excellent yet simple solution, and I think it's going to work. If you can, I mean, you probably are thinking about the Cove film and the huge difference that that made. Blackfish, for example. I really, really encourage you to do that, and definitely I think that's going to be the solution. Thank you for coming on the show today to speak about the illegal dolphin trade in Peru. To hear more about Stefan's experiences in exposing this trade, you can attend the talk happening on March 28th here in Vancouver, which you can find out more about on our website, animalvoices.org. And to find out more about what Mundo Azul does, please visit their website, mundoazul.org. Thanks, Stefan.
Thank you very much. And please, you can support our crowdfunding effort on Love Animals website and help us to stop this now. Thank you.
So I just wanted to say as well that Love Animals crowdfunding campaign, there's a link to it on our website as well. You are listening to Animal Voices here on 100.5 FM, CFRO, Vancouver Co-op Radio in Vancouver, British Columbia, Canada. And then also I would like to just give some details about the dolphin talk that's going to be happening at UBC, the University of British Columbia in Vancouver, on Saturday, March the 28th. at 8:15 p.m. This will be happening in the lecture hall number 2 of the Woodward Instructional Resources Center. And it's a free talk. You can meet Stefan there. He'll be there and speaking about what he learned about working undercover and traveling with the dolphin killers and hopefully getting support for his campaign.
Something else that's going on, if you haven't heard of the Vegan Congress, they're made up of students from Emily Carr and SFU Art who provide info and events about veganism to develop discourse and practical ethics. So from March 16th to the 19th, there'll be a series of free lunchtime events kicked off by a vegan tea party on the 16th. It'll be vegan tea and accompaniments along with psychedelic visuals by artist and designer Jesse Scott. Tea will be provided by Granville Island Tea Company with treats from Feeding Change. And it's at 11:30 to 1 at the Ape Rogatnik Center. And again, that's going to be at the Emily Carr Media Gallery. There's also going to be a vegan fashion show and also a photo gallery, actually. Actually, it's a photo booth, not a photo gallery. The photo booth's on March the 17th from 11:30 to 12:30. The vegan fashion show is going to be on Wednesday, March the 18th, and you get to meet designers, activists, and entrepreneurs creating vegan fashion. And then on Thursday, March the 19th, there's going to be a Compassion Manifesto, which is ethics art manifesto reading and open forum discussion with faculty, staff, and students. So a lot of fun events.
I posted that event info on our Facebook page as well, Animal Voices Vancouver.
Oh, great.
And hopefully everyone has some talent to share. We're going to...
I know you two do, because I've seen it.
So the Queer Animal Talent Show, which is organized by the Queer Animal Collective, is coming up April 18th at 7 p.m. at Heartwood Cafe. It's time to get talented, enjoy some great performances, got a song about liberation, a poem about love, or a dance about social justice. We'll accept talents of all varieties. Particular themes of interest include liberation, queer, gender issues, animals, social justice, love, or anything else you want to share. So it's pretty open. Please also extend this invite to all your queer networks. We'll prefer that most of the talent be in the LGBTQIA spectrum. We will accept talented allies as long as they fit within our mandate. All genders and sexual orientations are welcome to attend. And if you don't feel up to performing but want to watch everyone else perform, that is also completely welcome and encouraged. So please come out to the event. It's going to be great. And also, just another thing that's going to be happening in April that we've spoken about a bit on the show is the Greater Vancouver Zoo protest. The Greater Vancouver Zoo has been charged with animal cruelty under the BC Prevention of Cruelty to Animals Act, and many animals have died inside GVZ cages and confinements. Their deaths shrouded in mystery. The animals held captive inside the zoo are suffering, and they need our help. The Greater Vancouver Zoo's summer season officially begins on April 1st, so let's start off the season with a protest and let them know that exploiting animals in captivity for entertainment is unacceptable. And actually, just this past weekend, I went to a poster-making party for this particular event, and it went really well, and I suggest that everyone that plans on attending also host such events and get together and make some really creative, catchy posters for this powerful event. And that is on Sunday, April 5th at 12 p.m. Please join Greater Vancouver Zoo Protest on Facebook to coordinate rides and RSVP.
Today's feature interview is with Cheryl Fink. As the Wildlife Campaigns Director of IFAW Canada, the International Fund for Animal Welfare, her primary focus is to end the commercial seal hunt in Canada. Cheryl has observed the commercial seal hunt in Canada for 11 years, documenting the hunt from the air and on the ice to provide ongoing evidence of its cruelty and wastefulness. Her campaign work to end the hunt has included appearing on national television, leading public demonstrations, and providing testimony before politicians in Canada, the European Union, and Namibia. The Canadian seal hunt is still not dead, and despite an inability for sealers to even reach a sizable fraction of their quotas and a lack in the market for seal fur and meat, the annual Canadian seal slaughter is set to begin yet again this spring. Cheryl is here today to tell us about her work in fighting for the seals to get this industry over for once and for all, and to give us an update on what's happening in the issues surrounding the largest mass slaughter of marine animals on the planet in 2015. Hello, Cheryl, and welcome to the Animal Voices Show.
Hi, thanks for having me on.
Thank you for coming on the show today to speak up for the seals. The annual seal hunting season for Canada is coming up again soon. We've been hearing for the last several years that this hunt is a dying industry with little economic market, but yet our government is still stubbornly supporting the action of going out each year to bludgeon baby seals to death, all in the name of economy. And now 2 weeks ago, Fisheries Minister Gail Shea released a quota for 468,000 harp, hooded, and gray seals to be killed this year. What do you think of this?
I think it's pretty ridiculous, and I think most people who've been following the seal hunt would agree. The quota is specifically for 8,200 hooded seals, which I don't think any have been killed in recent years, 60,000 gray seals, again, very few have been hunted commercially in recent years, and 400,000 harp seals. And that's the main bulk of the commercial seal hunt that most people know about. Now, there's not a market out there for 400,000 harp seals, thank goodness. Last year, they only succeeded in hunting around 60,000 harp seals. And the year before, again, very low numbers, nowhere near reaching the quota. So thankfully, I don't think they'll reach the quota this year. I think that's a good thing. And really, this is a hunt that is on its way out, and we need to be seeing it on its way out and not trying to continue it.
Well, maybe you can talk about why they can't reach that quota. Are there still issues with there not being enough seals because of broken up ice flows and that?
In recent years, actually, it hasn't been the ice so much, but you're right. There's been quite a few years in the past decade where the ice conditions have been so poor that a lot of the pups have been dying before the sealers could even get out there due to being crushed up in the ice. Or the other situation is where there's very thick ice and the boats can't just get out. But right now we're looking at a situation where there just aren't markets for seal products. The European Union banned seal products in 2009. That legislation was recently upheld at the World Trade Organization, who said that the European Union was right to ban the trade in seal products and that ban could stay in place. So that's a market closed. Russia has banned the trade in seal products, which was our other main market, with 95% of Canadian fur exports going to Russia. So that's been cut off. Taiwan has recently banned the import of seal products. And there's really not that many places left that would want seal fur.
And when does the hunt officially start this year? Is there a start date yet? And can you tell us about the people who will be doing the killing?
We don't have a start date right yet. In fact, the hunt will be only closing on Sunday, March 15th. They'll be closing the hunt for a 2 to 3 week period to allow the white coat pups to be born and to molt their white fur. And then they'll open the hunt for the main bulk of the season. Most of the seals being killed are newborn pups that have recently just been weaned from their mothers and have just molted their white fur. So seals around 3 to 4 weeks of age. So that's when we expect it to open. So probably around the end of March for the Gulf of St. Lawrence and then early to mid-April for the front off of Newfoundland. And as we've seen, the number of sealers who actually go out has dropped quite a bit. According to DFO, there were fewer than 400 sealers last year and just slightly over 400 in 2013. This is a huge drop from, you know, over 5,000 sealers that went out in 2006. So we've seen a big drop in the number of people going out. And again, that's just because there aren't markets. There's no money in the seal hunt anymore. Again, this is a good thing for the protection of seals. And we're hoping again that it will be a very small hunt, that as people move out of the industry, as people find more sustainable and economically viable industries and ways of supplementing their income.
So in the past, it's been brought up to the Canadian government that if their main reason for the hunt is to support the economy for the sealers who need the supplementary income during their off-fishing season, then the use of taxpayers' money could go towards buying out the sealers and retraining them for other jobs instead of wasting the money on this industry that actually loses money anyways. What's the update to this proposal or idea for this year? Has there been any progress on it?
I mean, unfortunately, no. And I think this is the point that we really need to get across to the government, is that if they took the money that they're currently spending on trying to keep the seal hunt alive and put that into supporting other viable industries or transitioning people out of the sealing industry into other work or doing a license buyback, we need to remember this is only a part-time industry for people. It's only 2 to 3 weeks of the year. As we said, fewer than 400 people now participating in it. Now is the perfect opportunity to help transition these people out of the out of seal hunt and into something else, because I don't think this is an industry that's going to come back in the future. I don't think that we are going to see a huge resurgence in markets for seal fur. We had a small resurgence in the 2000s, and that's because of the millions of dollars that the government put into trying to artificially stimulate markets for this product. Even those have died down now, and it's appearing that even the hundreds of millions of dollars spent by governments in supporting the seal hunt is not enough to keep this industry alive.
Do you have a feeling of the political climate when it comes to why the government, our government, is, I'm calling it, why they're being stubborn and not accepting such an idea that really just seems to make economic sense when they're saying that they're doing it for the economy? Like, what's your grasp on that?
It baffles me as well right now. I mean, we have a conservative government. We need to remember, too, this seal hunt was brought back by the Liberal government. It's shown that it can't be economically viable on its own. It's required millions of dollars in government bailouts for the past 3 years. Why is a conservative government supporting an industry that has proven that it cannot stand on its own 2 feet? Just this past December, the Norwegian government decided that it was going to cut its subsidies to the sealing industry there. I think that's probably a very wise economic decision, and we'd like to see the Canadian government do the same and to help people transition to something else that is viable for the future.
So can you tell us what the results have been from the Canadian sealing industry in the last few years? For example, what happened with all the pelts and meat that was harvested from the killing? I know that you're saying that there's no market for these products, and I remember hearing that pelts were being kept and stored in warehouses. Can you give us an update on that?
But again, there's a lot of information that is missing out there. We know that around 60,000 seals were killed last year, but there's nowhere near that amount showing up in the export statistics. There's virtually nothing showing up as an export. We know that the seal meat deal that Fisheries Minister Gail Shea had made such a big deal about with China, that never came to fruition, and we haven't seen markets for seal meat take off either. So we're not seeing a lot in terms of export. We know there is some domestic market, people buying seal boots and purses, and there's some local restaurants that are serving seal meat, but that's certainly not enough to explain the 60,000 seals that were killed. So we honestly don't know where it's going right now, and I expect a lot of it is in warehouses still.
Well, I know you've had firsthand experience in the last decade of observing the hunt every year. Can you please tell us what you've seen on the ice when the seals are getting slaughtered? What have your experiences been in being right there in that killing environment?
It's absolutely horrible. I mean, words can't describe it, and especially when you contrast it with being out there a few days before the hunt starts and the peace and the quiet and the beauty of being out on the ice floes. The cries of the seal pups at this point, they're sort of alone on the ice. They've been left by their mothers. They're sort of playing with each other, splashing around in the little pools of water and kind of scratching themselves on the ice because their fur is molting and it's a little bit itchy. It's just such a wonderful experience to see these young animals in their natural habitat, but then to know that just a few days later, the boats will come, the helicopters will come, that the hunters will come with their rifles and clubs. And just to see these pools of water that just days earlier had seals playing in them are now filled with blood and carcasses. It's a horrific sight and something that I hope to never have to see again.
Yeah, I was actually just watching a video last night that you had made of your observations. They're skinning the seals on the ice. Like, what is that experience like? Can you speak a little bit more detailed about the actual experience of the slaughter and what they're doing to the bodies?
It's horrible. I mean, there's two ways that seals are primarily killed. One is clubbing them on the ice and the other is shooting from boats. I would say they're both equally horrible. When you're on the ice, I think the sensory experience of it, the boat engines and the diesel fumes and the cigarettes from the hunters that are smoking and the smell of the blood, it's just horrible. And the wet, slippery ice, it's a horrible, horrible experience. And these animals, I think to some sense they know what's happening. They will look up with fear. They will try to sort of scamper away, but they're very awkward on ice. They have no chance. And to look and to see the fear in their eyes as they look up at the hunter with the club is just, it gives me shivers even thinking about it. In other years, we've been forced to observe from helicopter when the seals are being shot from boats. And I think I've seen even, some of the worst examples of cruelty from the helicopter. even though we're removed distance-wise, it's still horrible to watch. We've seen seals that have just the lack of regard for humane killing or for any sensation the animal might be feeling. You know, animals hooked through the face while they're still barking and nipping at the hook, hooked through the face and hauled onto the boat while they're still crying. Animals in the bottom of a skiff or a small fishing boat that have been sliced open, clearly still making conscious movements, clenching their paws. You know, the sealer is right there. He can see what is happening. He can see that this animal is still gasping for breath while its belly is slit open, and he's not doing anything to put it out of its misery or to, you know, just continues on with his work. It's horrible, horrible to watch.
I'd like to talk now about the power in educating consumers about the egregious cruelties involved in the hunt. Do you think there is a large enough power in that will shift people who don't already oppose the slaughter to become against it and thus not support the industry? And perhaps you can speak a bit about what IFAW's tactics have been with conveying that information to the public.
I think, you know, we've always had the majority of public opinion, I think, on our side when it comes to the commercial seal hunt in Canada. Most people are supportive of Inuit or subsistence hunting where the animal is actually hunted for food. But when they learn about the commercial seal hunt and that it's conducted solely for fashion, for furs, to make coats and mittens and luxury products, that's sort of people make a distinction between that type of hunt. And I think when they learn about the waste that's involved, that the carcasses are left on the ice, that most of the meat isn't used, and when you combine that with the fact that this isn't a huge economic industry, it's not making a lot of money, if any money. If we took away the subsidies, I don't think there would be any money to be had in it whatsoever. And I think we're at the point where people are kind of wondering, you know, why are we still doing this? We don't need to do this anymore. Yes, we recognize that it's a big part of Newfoundland culture and heritage, and it's a big part of their history, but it's not something that we need to be continuing in the present day and age. So I think we have public opinion there. It's just making it an important enough issue for people to take action and to contact their members of parliament and members of government and let them know that this is something that we don't want to see subsidized with our tax dollars anymore, and it's something that we'd like to see ended and support for other industries.
So I know we were talking earlier about the bans on the import of seal products from certain countries. In the last 6 years, we've seen bans from the European Union, Russia, and Taiwan, as you were saying. Can you tell us who in 2015 is in the market now to buy seal meat and pelts from this year's hunt? I know that you're saying that there really is a diminishing market, but there's got to be someone who's buying it.
There, we've seen small amounts of exports going to South Korea, a little bit of meat going to Japan, and I think Iceland is still marked. But again, these are very, very small quantities of product, certainly not enough to justify a quota of 400,000 animals being killed this year. I know that the industry still has their eye on China as being a big market for fur. Obviously, the population there is so large that even if a very small percentage took an interest in seal fur, that it could have devastating consequences on the seal population. I read a story. There's a fellow in Newfoundland who's just opened a factory in China, and he was looking to open another one in Canada, in Newfoundland, and he was going to make seal fur iPad covers for the Chinese market, and this was going to be the next big thing. And, you know, you really just start to question the necessity of all of it. We really need to slaughter wildlife to make iPad covers. It just doesn't make any sense whatsoever.
Yeah, that really puts things into perspective. From what I've read, IFAW has actually been trying to grow an opposition in China. So what have you been doing there, and how is that working out?
We've been working with local grassroots organizations primarily, and there has been a pretty large increase in outcry and in awareness about the seal hunt in general. So I feel very positive about that. As I said, this deal for seal meat that Gail Shea was boasting about a few years ago never came to happen, and that's thanks to the public outcry from Chinese citizens. So I'm optimistic that this will continue, and as people are more aware of the cruelty, that they will continue to reject and say no to seal products.
So just because this question comes up from time to time, I'd like to know about what your stance is on the Inuit seal hunt. We've been talking about the commercial seal hunt here, and you've probably heard about a recent proposal that has gone to the EU that might make some stipulations in which they wouldn't accept seal products from Inuit hunting.
We don't oppose subsistence hunting for seals by Inuit or Indigenous peoples. It's a very different sort of hunt than from the commercial hunt. As I said, they're actually consuming the animal that they're killing. It's not this competitive, large-scale rush to kill 400,000 animals in a two-week period. It's a slower paced. It's more akin, I guess, to a recreational hunt for deer or something. But it's not. It doesn't have the competitive factor. And again, they're using the whole animal. So it's not something that we're campaigning against. Right now, Inuit hunted seal products are allowed into the European Union and can be placed on the market. That was something that Canada had challenged at the World Trade Organization, but it seems to have settled down a bit now. We would obviously be concerned if a commercial seal hunt developed in the north as well for the same reasons as we're concerned about it on the East Coast. I don't think commercial slaughter of wildlife is necessary in any circumstance. So we're watching that and we'll be seeing what happens.
So what is your prediction for the seal hunt in the future? I remember the Sea Shepherd making a statement maybe 3 years ago saying, oh, the seal hunt is dead. We're not even going to think about it anymore. But the killing is still happening. When will the seal hunt finally die? What is in the future for it in the next couple of years?
Yeah, and I think it's true that the numbers have dropped in a huge way. The numbers of seals killed have dropped since 2008 from 217,000 down to 60,000, which is fantastic. And that's thanks to these trade bans and the European Union ban and the Russian ban and really closing the markets for seal products. I think what we need to do is just stay the course and keep the pressure on. We need to stop the federal subsidies for this industry. Right now, there's really only one main processor left in Newfoundland. And if that processor were to shut down, we may see the end of this thing. So we know this is a long-term campaign. We've been working on this since 1969. And I also know they say when people get closer to their goals or what they're trying to achieve, there's a tendency to sort of back off a little bit. And I think now is not the time to back off. Now is the time to keep the pressure on. We want to see this thing through to the end. There's no reason to be commercially hunting seals in this country. There's no political reason why it should continue. And we just need to mobilize people, get them motivated, contacting their members of parliament, and let them know that we want to see it ended.
Thank you, Cheryl, for shedding light on this issue of the annual Canadian seal slaughter and giving us the most up-to-date information on the subject on where the slaughter stands in 2015. To find out more facts about the Canadian commercial seal hunt, you can visit IFAW's website at ifaw.org. Thank you, Cheryl, and thanks for all the work that you're doing.
Thank you so much, Allison.
So you've been listening to Animal Voices on 100.5 FM CFRO, Vancouver's Cooperative Radio on unceded Coast Salish territories. Please join us on our next show, which is Friday, March 20th, for the Meat Out Show, where Allison will speak with Paul Shapiro of HSUS about meat consumption trends and declines. We here at Animal Voices want to connect with you online. Animalvoices.org is where you can stream shows from our archive or download podcasts, read our show blog with detailed links, subscribe via iTunes, and learn more about upcoming events. Stay in touch with us via our Facebook page, Animal Voices Vancouver, and join us on Twitter at Animal Voices YVR. And please send us all your suggestions, comments about the show, either on Facebook or radioanimalvoices@gmail.com.
Thanks, Jackie. And now I wanted to take the time to honor a special hero for the animals who lost his battle with cancer last week. His name was Sam Simon, and you may have heard of him before. He made his millions as being one of the co-creators of the Simpsons TV series and others after that, but he is known among the animal world as being an incredibly powerful force as an ardent animal rights activist who used his many resources to liberate animals and help humanity. He was entrenched as an activist in so many ways, a compassionate and generous individual, and I was honored to be able to hear him speak at an animal rights conference several years ago, where he certainly left his impact of inspiration and humor on myself and everyone in the room. He will be missed, and his legacy will carry on. We're going to close the show now with some words from Sam on what he predicted for the future for the animals, and then a song performed by my band that I dedicate to him called Today I'm Gonna Try and Change the World, which is what he tried to do and made many steps in accomplishment. Thank you for listening to the show today, and remember to be kind to the animals.
The future for the animals is they will have rights, and we will not use them for clothing, we will not use them for food, we will not use them for entertainment, will not use them for medical experiments, which are bogus, and will not abuse them in any way. Now, when that's going to happen, I'm not too sure. But I do think it will happen, and I think that here in the year 2013, there's a lot of really good things happening. I think people's attitudes are changing. Some stuff goes forward, some stuff seems like it's going back a little bit. But overall, I think it's I think it's moving in a positive direction, and I think that we're going to be thought of as barbarians when people look back in 100 years and see that we put orcas in concrete bathtubs, and that we ate pigs, and that we poached whales in a whale sanctuary.
Today I'm gonna try to change the world. Gonna take it one day at a time. I've made my resolution. I've opened up my change the world.